So, Jeff, I have a prepared statement, if you'll allow it.
I don't normally allow for these things, but today I think I will.
Okay. Dear Apple, thank you for giving me a lot of what I wanted from WWDC. And I can't believe I get to say this out loud, iPad OS. But after I've seen the Mac Pro and your $1,000 stand that holds up the monitor, I've decided you cannot get real work done on the iPad. I am forsaking it and moving all of my workflow to the Mac Pro. I'll be spending my next 2 years' salary on buying the maxed out configured Mac Pro with 1.5 terabytes of memory, two graphics cards, that thing that makes video processing go really fast that they created that I forgot what it's called. Yes, I'm forsaking the iPad and you know, moving to the Mac Pro, because that's the only way you can get real work done is with a $1,000 monitor arm. Which I thought was a joke at first. Honestly, yeah. I thought that was a joke. Because they kept, like, Craig kept, like, kind of, like, making some jokes. And later on, he made a joke about iTunes and stuff like that. And I kept waiting for them to come out and be like, did you really think we were going to sell you a monitor arm for $1,000? And then, like, that never happened.
No, it never did.
Yeah. I mean, so the price of the Mac Pro, I kind of want to talk about the Mac Pro a little bit because I am excited about it.
I am very surprised that we're talking about this at the top of the show.
I want to get it out of the way, because if I don't get it now, then I'll forget about it and won't be able to do it. So okay. The price of the Mac Pro, I saw some people complaining about it, starts at $6,000. For what you get, that's actually pretty good. Other than the storage, but you know, whatever. Like, Apple's always been expensive when it comes to storage. But for what you get for that kind of machine, that's pretty good. The monitor itself, like the monitors that it's competing with, it's not competing with like the LG ultra wide 5K monitors and stuff like that. It's competing with like true filmmaking reference monitors that you see in editing studios and on set. Like, you don't, like, that's what that's competing with. It is not competing with like what you buy off Amazon. So, like, price wise, like, it all makes sense. Except until you get to the monitor arm. So, anyways, I'm not forsaking the iPad. I love my iPad, and I'm really excited to talk about iPad OS. But I thought the monitor arm thing was funny. But overall, like, the Mac Pro is really cool, and I know it's kind of like some people like it, some people don't, but I really like the look of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Matt Birchler said a really good thing. Like, if they were to say, instead of the monitor costing $59.99 or whatever, and they said it would cost $69.99, and that's with the stand.
It's $5,000 for the monitor, and then another $1,000 for the stand. So the base price of the Mac Pro is $6,000, and the base price of the monitor is $5,000 plus another $1,000 for the stand. So it's essentially the same if you just bought the base model, which I don't think anyone that's going to buy the Mac Pro will buy the base model.
No.
Unless they do like buy the base model and then get like PCIe storage cards and then put those in there, because it starts with 256 gigs of storage, which I think is ridiculously low.
Yep.
But you could always get like PCIe storage cards and put them in there, and those suckers are going to be fast.
Yep.
So, I mean, man, my like high school, like video editing, like when I did like this film school thing in high school, and we had a Mac Pro then, and it was one of the cheese grater ones, and it would have been one of the 2008. What was there one before 2008? I think it might have been the 2008 one, because we got it my senior year, so it'd have been 2008, 2009. Okay. And that was an awesome machine to work on. I love the cheese grater Mac Pro, but whew, this new one's nice.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's my thoughts on the Mac Pro. We can move on now. Please don't unsubscribe. We'll talk about the iPad now.
So, what do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about iOS or iPad OS?
Well, I think we should talk about the difference. So, I'm actually kind of really excited about this. So, forever, the iPhone and the iPad have run the same OS, iOS. It was originally called iPhone OS, and it was even called the iPhone OS for the first couple of versions when it was on the iPad, which was kind of weird. But then they were like, hey, you know, this runs on multiple devices now, including the iPod Touch. Let's just call it iOS. But now the iPad has gotten to the point where it's its own thing. It's you know, it's getting features the iPhone just doesn't have, like drag and drop, multitasking, blah, 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 blah. So Apple said, you know, we're going with iPad OS, which gets me really excited because that means they have another OS to talk about, you know, whenever there is a major update, whenever there's like WWDC. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean I think we're going to get updates to it every single year. I mean, it could very well be like, hey, this year's the off year for iPad OS, but it just means somewhere inside Apple Park, iPad OS is on somebody's mind, so the iPad is on somebody's mind. And that just that gives me a lot of hope for the future of the iPad.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting that they have made it its own operating system, because if you think about it, now they have to think of something that comes just to iPad OS every year, as opposed to...
Well, I mean, like I said, I mean, there could be an off year. It doesn't necessarily have to be. And it's still basically running iOS too. So like all of the iOS 13 features are in iPad OS in this release of iPad OS. So like it still gets that. So they could easily say like, okay, we're not doing anything iPad OS specific, but here's a bunch of stuff in iOS 14 that's also coming to the iPad.
True, true. I mean, that could happen, but I just don't think it's Apple's kind of thing where they have a brand new platform essentially, which is only for the iPad. And then they come out and they say, hey, we don't have anything new for like iOS 14 or anything that's specific to the iPad. Because like then the question begs of like, why would you create your own OS for it or have your own platform for it, as opposed to just saying that like if you have an iPad now when running iOS, these certain things are going to come with it, which is what they've done for the last, you know, what, 10 years now? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me to not assume that they're going to come up with feature first things that come out every year just for the iPad, you know?
Well, one, I've learned never to assume anything, especially when it comes to Apple. I think, like, I mean, look at tvOS. The second year tvOS was out, it didn't really get anything new. And that, like, that was brand new. Like, they were all, you know, rah, 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 future of TV's apps, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, it's still iOS. So if they'd have like a major iOS year where it's a major iOS redesign or something like that, I don't think we'll get as many iPad features. Now, I hope I'm wrong. Like, I'm just trying not to get myself like overly psyched up and then disappointed next year. Like, that's what I'm trying to avoid. So overall, like, don't get me wrong. I'm very excited it's its own thing. I think it bodes well for the iPad and people that use the iPad. But, you know, I'm just trying to stay calm and not, you know, not
don't
get a little...
Don't freak out.
Yeah, don't freak out. Don't get too carried away. Automatically assume that means Final Cut is coming to the iPad next year. Like, you know, just trying to stay calm a little bit.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so with iPad OS coming out, I think it's a good sign for iPad first people or iPad only people such as yourself and, you know, people like Federico Vidici or other guys that and women are interested in using the iPad first, and I think it bodes well for people that are like that. So let's get into some of the iOS things. They first did some performance updates for iOS 13, and this is for both. I see, like, here's now my question is, like, with the iOS 13 specific stuff, is that also for the iPad, or is this
Okay. Yes. So, like some of the performance stuff, like Face ID is 30% faster. That's, like, on the iPad page of Apple's website and stuff like that. App size smaller. Of course, that's going to span across iOS and iPad OS. See, this is where things get a little confusing, because the iPad is still running iOS.
Right.
It's still Springboard that launches all the apps and stuff like
that.
So it's still iOS. It's not like this completely rewritten OS from the ground up. It just basically means that there are features on the iPad that aren't on the iPhone.
Fair enough. Okay.
So yeah, so like all the performance stuff is there. Like the other big thing that was announced with iOS 13 is dark mode. which I have to say looks beautiful.
Yes.
I have turned it on and I am not going back. The only thing the only minor problem I have with it is and it's completely specific to me, is when you film a screen of an iPad, because it's so reflective and you have a dark background, you can see the camera and you can see me poking over it. So last night when I was doing my or I guess technically this morning, because I didn't finish till 2 a.m. I was doing my iPad OS overview, there's a few shots where you can see me staring down at my iPad.
See, what you need now is a matte screen cover, that way you don't have to worry.
I had the paper like one for a while and I really like it, but it's hard to film that screen, so
yeah.
But overall, like, dark mode looks great, especially on the home screen. One of the really cool features is it changes the wallpaper. And I saw something, I haven't had a chance to play with it. Maybe I can see if I can get it going right now while we're talking. But apparently it, like, does stuff to the custom wallpaper too, if it can. I don't know. I haven't really played with that part. But, like, the built-in wallpapers, there's both, like, a light mode and a dark mode. So if you enable light mode, it's white. If you enable dark mode, it's black. It's pretty cool. Like, I'm a big fan of dark mode on the iPad.
See, and I've been a Mac user off and on since Mojave came out. Well, I've been using my Mac for a longer time than that, but when Mojave came out, I was still actively using my Mac and I would switch to dark mode, but for whatever reason it just didn't click with me. But I tried doing dark mode stuff recently and I'm really enjoying it. Like, I use IA Writer on my Mac right now and I have the dark mode theme enabled. And it looks way better than when I have, like, Google Docs right next to it, which is what I have now. And it's, like, it just seems way too bright for me. So dark mode's kind of growing on me. And I think that if I do that with my iPad, it is also going to be a really welcome change. Because I think that dark mode, if done correctly, which I think Mojave is a really good example of doing it correctly, that if they do the same thing with iOS, I think that it's going to bode really well. And so long as they make it easier for people, specifically developers, to create their applications to add dark mode to it without having to do a whole heck of a lot, like create a whole new theme for their app, I think that would bode well for them as well. So, well, I'm curious to kind of see what the developer side of things are when it comes to things like dark mode.
So I watched a bit of the State of the Union, and all the sessions and stuff are starting right now as well. So yeah, we don't know everything, but it does look like they will have to make some changes, which I think is a good thing overall, because the issue with dark mode right now on iOS, on like iOS 12 and back, is it's not consistent. So one app can have like a darker shade of gray as dark mode, another one could have a lighter shade of gray, and then another one could have pure black. So if you put these apps in split view next to each other, they don't look consistent and they look terrible. So right now with all the first party apps, since they have support for the dark mode, and you put them side by side, they look consistent across it and everything looks really good and really uniformed.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I think that I mean, my only concern is that I actually don't like the pure black dark mode themes. I like it to have a little bit of gray. I'm weird.
Like this.
God. Ooh. Okay. I'll probably just have to get used to it.
I think they look pretty good. Overall, I think they look good. And I'm running it on a sixth generation iPad, just like the generic 9.7 one. I haven't even put it on my iPhone 10 or my iPad with like the liquid retina display, so like the black stuff looks good. And I still think it looks good on this on the cheap iPad. So
Yeah, some people were saying that it's gonna conserve battery life, but I don't think that's the case. I think
On OLED it will, because it's not lighting up pixels.
Yeah, but the thing is that like
it's not gonna be like, technically, yes, it will conserve battery life. No, it's not going to give you hours upon hours of extra battery life. Fair so, like, enough, technically, yeah. It will probably conserve, like, you know, a few minutes maybe. I don't know. I guess it depends on your battery health and all sorts of different things and how much you're using it and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, it's literally the difference between it having to turn on a pixel and turn off a pixel. So,
yeah, true. All right. We'll have to see what comes with it. Swipe keyboard is now built into iOS. How do you feel about that one?
I've never cared about the swipe keyboards. I've never been good at them. I'm glad it's there for the people that want it.
Yeah. The Photos app has a UI update. I mean, you're the only one here, by the way, that has the betas on a device. So I'm kind of asking you a bunch of questions, and that's because I don't know. I haven't been able to look at it besides the keynote and stuff.
So overall, I mean, my photos library just downloaded to this thing this morning, so I haven't really had a ton of time to go through it. But I really like what they did with changing like the way you organize the main, like the home area, the mm-hmm. home tab. Like you can pick like day, year, month, and stuff like that. And what they try to do is they try and be smart. So like, I don't know about you, but whenever I have a family member take pictures, they have to like take like 8 different pictures.
Yep.
And like, even though all 8 of them are practically the same thing, and they don't ever go through and delete them. So like, anytime you're scrolling through photos, you get like 8 of the same photo right next to each other. This like tries to pick the best one and then like puts that there, and then that way you don't see the other 7. Which I think is pretty smart. It's a much nicer, cleaner way of viewing photos. My photos library right now is a mess, so I need to go through and clean all that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine you probably have as many screenshots and videos of your screen as you do actual photos and videos.
Those I'm actually pretty good about cleaning up because I have shortcuts for cleaning up stuff.
Okay.
But it's mostly just like... it's a lot of day job stuff. It's a lot of like, hey, I took a picture of this port with the number because I needed that, or I took a picture of this IP address on this computer or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of stuff like that that I don't have like a shortcut or something to clean those up, because it's really easy for like screenshots to be like, okay, like just in shortcuts, get the screenshots, find them, delete, like select which ones, delete, and then like videos and stuff, same thing. Like there's even like a video subfolder in photos, so it's really easy just to go in there, select the videos, and delete them. But yeah, that's something for another time. I need to figure that out.
Maybe like a smart album or something like that, so you could do something by location.
I don't think, are smart albums on iOS yet? I don't think they're on here yet. I don't think they're here. It's
there's
annoying.
A way you can sort things by location. You can just
but that's we'll deal with my photos album another time. That's not interesting.
Sure.
But what is interesting? New share sheet.
Yes. Okay, so I'm very, very keen on understanding what exactly is new with this, because the only thing I've seen right now is the keynote, and it's a bold difference to what the share sheet is now, which is essentially just 2 rows. And this one seems to be broken up and a little bit bigger with more screen real estate, especially for iPad users. So kind of walk me through what exactly is going on here, Chris.
Okay, so there's a few different things now. So the first row is now like people you communicate with quickly and their medium. So I send a lot of people iMessage stuff. So like some of the people, like I have my family, my parents, my brother, my sister-in-law, and I, we all have like an iMessage group. So like that's one of the first ones, and a couple of my friends and stuff, they're like right up there. So if I selected a photo in the share sheet, I could just hit them and then I'll just like send off through iMessage, because there's like a little iMessage icon down there, so that it shows that that's how. In fact, there's one for you right there. I'm gonna send you a photo of me. I'm just gonna boom down. Oh, hang on, never mind. My photo album hasn't downloaded yet. Okay, that was a fail, but that's okay. And then the second row is like kind of more sharing per app, so it's more of the traditional like messages, mail, notes, reminders, books. I don't really have any third party apps on here right now because I wiped the device and I just haven't had a chance. Then underneath that, this is where all the actions are, and the actions aren't in a row anymore. They're in like 2 columns side by side, and I actually really like this. So like you have like the copy photo, which is specific to photos, copy iCloud link, slideshow, AirPlay. But if you keep scrolling down past all those, you know, past the save to files, assign to contact, there's all of the shortcuts that you have that are the share sheet based ones. You no longer have to hit the shortcuts app icon, and then it brings up the menu of all the shortcuts. The shortcuts are just right there in the share sheet now.
Yeah, because the shortcuts is built into iOS now.
Yes. Well, yes. Shortcuts is so like when you install iOS, the iOS 13, it will, if you don't have Shortcuts already, which I'd be kind of surprised if somebody's listening to this show and they don't have Shortcuts installed. But anyways, your mom, grandma, dad, brother, whatever, they download it. Shortcuts is built into the OS now. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit, but it's pretty, I'm very happy about that. I'm so happy that Shortcuts is built in, because now we don't have to worry about, is it getting enough downloads? Are they not going to use it? Is no one using it? What if it never gets any updates and it breaks my whole workflow?
See, I have a theory about Shortcuts, is that like they it was basically this, the iOS 12 was Shortcuts soft opening kind of thing, and iOS 13 is going to be Shortcuts grand opening, where it's more accessible for people, and it's just built right into the app, and people can just start playing around with it, and I think that they wanted to get a bigger group than just the people that are used to using workflow to try and use this. And I think that allowed for them to get even more data as of what people are using, like what people are having trouble with, and that kind of stuff, where they can get information about that, and people are filing radars and asking support for questions on this, and like that allowed for Apple to kind of be like, okay, cool, let's see what we can do to kind of make this easier for the moms and grandmas and everybody that isn't necessarily familiar with automation to kind of get their hands on this and use the power that's built into their phone now. And I think that was a really smart move on them, especially because they had this new gallery kind of thing for Shortcuts 3.0, where they have some sort of entry thing. I don't know if it's like an entry thing where like you open the app for the first time and it has certain things, or if it's just like part of the gallery now.
What? I'm not sure. Shortcuts the app got a big update, like a big UI update. So the gallery, there's some stuff in there that's changed. There's some stuff like when you open it up now, there's some stuff that says Shortcuts for your apps, and then some stuff that's a little more specific. Like one of them is for reminders, telling me to check out a project. There's another one that's a note that I've been using a lot, and so on and so on. But the gallery is still there. The My Shortcuts page got an update. Like everything is kind of like the colors are a lot softer. Which kind of, it looks really good with dark mode. When you create a shortcut now, this is the part I'm having a problem with. There is, so if you open up Shortcuts now and hit new shortcut in iOS 12, and then you hit the search field, there's a bunch of like categories for you to go into and browse all the actions. Those categories are gone now. So there's the suggested stuff now. And then there's like six categories up top. There's apps, favorites, scripting, media, locations, documents, sharing, and web. And that is not everything. So like say I wanted to use like the things action, I would have to actually still go, I would have to go into the search box, type in things, and then pull it up. So there's no like way to browse to certain ones. Now, I will say I have found a few actions already that I'm really excited about, one of which is AirPlay, which is pretty cool, which means you can like AirPlay to certain devices, and that'll play a part in just a second. But overall, the new organization of actions, I'm not sure is beneficial, because usually how I told people to play, you know, to learn Shortcuts is go through these categories, find actions, hit the I next to them, read like what they're about, and, you know, and use them in a way. So unless I'm obviously missing something, and I've spent literally less than 12 hours with iOS, right around 12 hours now, actually, with iPad OS. I this might be a regression, to be honest, but we'll see. Like I don't really want to like start judging something just yet, because I haven't really used it that much.
And it's beta 1, who knows, maybe there'll be some updates to it ongoing, and the Shortcuts team is just working on some stuff that they weren't able to ship out in beta 1, but they'll plan to ship out later. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, the UI, I don't know. We'll see. But there is a new tab. So before there was the My Shortcuts and the Gallery tab and Shortcuts, but there's a new tab called Automation. And this is kind of basically what every time I'd make a Shortcuts video, everyone would ask for. So this will allow you to run Shortcuts at a specific time, at a specific location when you arrive, leave, or before you leave. when you connect to CarPlay, if you have CarPlay, or contacts. So based on, like, if you connect to a Wi-Fi network or turn on airplane mode, or when you tap an NFC tag. Or when you open a certain app. So one that I plan on setting up, but I just haven't had a time, is for podcasting. So when I open Skype, put my device in Do Not Disturb.
Okay, that's wild that they will just do that automatically when you open a specific. That's cool. That's really interesting. I think that is a big addition to shortcuts. I will say that that's huge, because like that basically kills a number of applications that people were using to kind of get around this. Mainly Launch Center Pro was one of them, where they were using NFC tags to then run shortcuts or do specific actions, and now it's built into shortcuts. And Launch Center Pro is also like, at a specific time we'll send you a notification so you can run a specific shortcut or do a specific thing. And now if it's doing it automatically on
let me back up a little bit. So when you do something like based on location or time, it doesn't just automatically run in the background. It sends you a notification and you have to allow it.
Now
I haven't played around with, I've barely had 12 hours, and I've spent, you know, 5 of those hours sleeping. So I've barely had any time with this, so I'll have to report back. But like, I'm not sure how, like, if open app, if it sends you a notification to run it, or if it's you know, automatically in the background or something like that. But it is pretty cool that this stuff is built in now.
Well, even if it does just send like a notification, that's what Launch Center Pro was doing before. Like, it just seems a redundant application to have now, even if it is that case, where it has to have the user tap on a notification and run the action. Even if that's the case, it's exactly what Launch Center Pro is doing, pretty much.
Overall, yeah, it's basically that. Yeah. So that's kind of shortcuts 3.0. I'm going to do like I was debating whether or not I was going to have this in like my big like iPad OS walkthrough video, but I think there's enough stuff in here that'll probably warrant it getting its own separate video.
Okay.
So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of need to see. I need to go through here. I wish there was a way that I could run like a diff against shortcuts 3.0 and shortcuts like 2.2.1, so I could see like what the difference between the two are.
Right.
Because I have, unfortunately, since they took away like the ability to just browse categories for actions, I have no idea what all the new actions are. So I'll have to see if there's documentation somewhere on Apple's site or something, and see if I could find it, because it looks like there's a lot of cool stuff in there. One thing that it kind of makes even better now is the iPad OS home screen. There's no separate today view window. You swipe in from the left side and you bring the widgets in, and you have the ability to either pin them there so they're permanently there all the time, or you could just set it so that you can swipe in from the left side to bring them in, or you can swipe back from the left side to close them. So if you don't always want them there, you don't always have to have them there. But this means like you have shortcuts right there on the home screen, so it's really easy to just tap what you want and run and go.
Yeah,
which I'm really excited about. Shortcuts and probably Timery are the two that I think I could see myself using the most.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that's essentially what I do now. That, and I like to be able. Like, my only concern with that is, and maybe you can answer this question, but if you were to swipe down. Like, if you're in an application, you swipe down to show the today view, can you swipe over and show the widgets still, or no?
Yes. So they don't have a separate view, and it kind of looks like it's like a little buggy right now. Like it, but basically, if you pull down to get Notification Center and swipe over from the left, the widgets do come up, but the UI looks weird right now. So I'm guessing this is just like that it's not quite finished. So I don't know what like the final version of it will look like.
Okay. Okay. The reason I ask is because sometimes, especially if I'm listening to something with my AirPods, I like to check my battery life when I can. If the widget is like specifically only for the home screen, and it's not in the today view, which it is, so thankfully that's not the case, but I was just concerned about that, because then you would have to go home every time to see the full battery widget in order to see everything on there. So I'm glad that they made that distinction where it's there in the home screen, but it's also still available in the Today view. Hopefully the bugs will get fixed out, and I'm sure they will be. I mean, we got plenty of time during the summer to go
this
over
is
it,
literally beta one. So and they made it so difficult to install. Like nobody should be installing beta one. I wouldn't have installed beta one if I didn't have a separate test device, because it is so unbelievably buggy right now that it not unbelievably because it's a beta, but it is very buggy. So, you know, it's just the kind of the typical warning, I guess. I don't typically like saying don't install something, even though I did it, but it is pretty bad. But if you have like a separate test device or an older iPad or an older iPhone laying around, go for it, that you don't mind like, you know, losing everything. Keep in mind, there are some iCloud bugs. I thought I lost all my iMessage stuff when I first installed it. So, that was a little scary. Yeah, I thought I lost all my iMessage stuff and all my shortcuts. So, keep in mind, there may be some iCloud bugs. So,
everything.
I don't want to be the guy that says, you know, don't do what I do, but like, you know, I installed the beta, but I installed the beta on a separate device, and I understand I may lose some data over it. So we'll see what happens. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, but I'm staying optimistic that it should be fine.
Yeah. So there were a couple small things with Safari Mail and Notes. Can we do a quick round robin of those, or you know?
Well, Safari got a huge update. I don't know what you mean by small for Safari.
Okay. Like,
Safari,
all right.
Big stuff.
We'll put Safari away. Mail and Notes. I mean,
Mail got some features that it needed, and I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. So hopefully you know.
Let me see
them.
If I might have notes here.
Notes still has that really terrible paper background that I don't like, but it got something that I'm very excited for, and that is shared folders. So that essentially means we could probably move our show notes off Google Docs if we wanted to.
Yeah, we could. I mean, I'm not going to do it today, but
No. I would say let's wait till, you know, iOS 13 is officially out, but
we could
move like that off Google Docs, because Google Docs is terrible.
I mean, we can get into this now, but you can actually use Google Notes on Safari now and stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Safari for the iPad. So Safari for iPad OS is now what they consider a desktop class browser. Which means whenever you pull up a website like Google Docs, or personally the one I got really excited about, Squarespace, it will now load the desktop version, and you can do everything you want. Like, I was poking around in Google Docs and Squarespace last night, and I wasn't really finding anything that I couldn't do. I had a little bit of trouble bringing up the digital keyboard in Google Docs at first, but that could have just been an iOS 13 bug. So I'm not thinking the world's coming to an end right now, but you know, that's okay. The other thing that I got that I'm really excited about is a download manager. That's awesome. Super excited about that.
This is another application that kind of gets killed, is iCab Mobile, if that's the case, because
I don't think so. I always think there will be some really terrible websites that go, hey, you're an iPad, we need to make you go to the mobile site no matter what. And looking at you, YouTube. Actually, I haven't tried YouTube on here now. Let's see here.
Test.
YouTube.com. Go. Actually, I'm just curious to see if it loads the desktop site or the mobile site. Going. Hey, it loads the desktop site.
Neat. So now the question begs, is the desktop site actually the better user experience for all websites when it comes to the iPad?
Yes.
Because sometimes because the way that Apple kind of presented this is that there was essentially two different browsing experiences. There's one with the phone, and there's one with the Mac, and the iPad is kind of this weird middle ground where it'll sometimes load the mobile preview as if it were a phone, because it basically says it's an iPad, or it says it's an iOS device. So that can kind of be a little worrisome and a little annoying. So now iPad is essentially trying to do, I don't know if it's something that is website specific, or if it's something that Safari is doing on its own. Maybe you can give me some insight in this, but essentially the iPad is now desktop class browsing.
The web is weird. The web is this open, weird thing that shouldn't work. Like, if you know how the web works, you basically know it's held together via popsicle sticks and duct tape. Like, it's it's this very weird thing. So if you were developing a modern web page, you should have it dynamically scale from a small phone to, you know, the new 32-inch Mac Pro display. Like, it should scale for that, whatever device you're on. And the iPad is at this screen size where it's definitely not a small phone. But, you know, it's still a touchscreen device. So if you're building a website correctly, it shouldn't be a big deal. But if you're, you know, building a website or haven't updated your website in a while, it may be a big deal. It's going to be one of those things. Time will tell. My tests so far, my two biggest issues have been in the past have been Google Docs and Squarespace. And both of those are working perfectly right now with beta one. So yeah. I'm pretty happy.
I used to have a Squarespace website, but one of the biggest reasons why I decided to move over to like WordPress or something like that was to use, because I wanted to use my iPad to edit the website, and it's not necessarily easy to do it on WordPress with an iPad, but it was impossible to do it with the iPad for Squarespace, because Squarespace just didn't work.
And that's why I like Squarespace, was because I couldn't edit it on my iPad, so I didn't spend my time editing my website as opposed to making stuff.
I feel like that's a subtweet, but we'll continue.
I mean, no, it's, well, I guess it kind of is. Stop moving your website. It really didn't mean to be, but yeah, I guess it kind of did turn out to be.
It was. That's exactly what it was.
But the download manager too, is it actually works really well. You and I have had issues in the past with Auphonic, trying to get files out of Auphonic. It works perfectly now.
It's been a struggle. I mean, that's what iCab was my main browser when I used Auphonic. And for those of you who don't know, Auphonic is a really good post-processing audio web app that does really good work, and we love it for podcasting. And if you're into podcasting, you should check it out. There'll be a link in the description, a link in the show notes. I'm feeling like a YouTuber now, Chris.
And subscribe!
Yeah, I mean, the download manager is a very welcome thing, but my question, and they didn't go into this in the keynote from what I can remember, does it save in like a local storage file? Does it save in a Safari file in the Files app? Like, where does the local downloads, like the download manager stuff, go?
So in iCloud Drive, there is now a downloads folder, and it goes there. And then you can move it to wherever you want. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of basically like the Mac. Like, there's a downloads folder, and then from there, you do whatever you need to do with it. Wonderful. It even has the Mac icon. Like, it has the folder icon with the arrow pointing down, like, which made me really unbelievably happy, which I was like, oh, yeah, a little bit of the Mac. I still like the Mac. I don't know why everyone thinks I don't, but I still like it.
I don't know why. I don't know when this became a love-hate thing. Like, I have my iPad and my Mac next to each other right now.
It's not. Like, I like giving you crap, but, like, it's really, like, just use whatever works for you.
It's like
what I tell you every time you tell me you're switching back to whichever device you're switching back to. I can't even keep track of what you're on right now, and I just tell you, you do you, boo. You do.
I am actually on a Google Chromebook right now, so there.
Hashtag Team Pixel. Hashtag gift from Google.
There's also a ton of keyboard shortcuts that have been moved over to Safari as well. So
yeah, I haven't even really gone through them so far, but it looks like you can do a lot of navigating and manipulating straight through the keyboard.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, because if there's one thing that I want more of is keyboard shortcuts and ways to navigate around with just the keyboard as opposed to having to use the touch interface. And I'm not opposed. The reason that I say that isn't because I want something that doesn't have a touch interface. The iPad is a great device when you want to use touch, but sometimes it just doesn't make sense to you. You'll have zombie arm every time you try and move something, especially when you're using a keyboard with it. And to have the option to kind of navigate without having to touch something and did you just use the keyboard is great. I mean, Things 3 is a fantastic iPad app that kind of uses this, uses the tools with keyboard shortcuts that allows you to do that in a perfect way. And I feel really, really strongly about that. And I think that if they want iPadOS to be its own thing and to have Mac-like qualities and to have it be a laptop replacement, quote-unquote, it needs to offer those kind of things in order for it to work. But that's my only that's my only preachy thing right now, is that like I want more and more keyboard shortcuts, and I want more and more abilities that the keyboard can use when it comes to using the iPad. And it's nice to see that Safari is kind of their first step in this.
Yeah. Can I talk about the Files app?
Please. I would love to.
I'm so unbelievably excited about this. I got basically everything I wanted for the Files app. So first off, column view. Hell yeah. I am unbelievably excited about column view. Column view has always been, Steve Jobs and I have this in common. It's our favorite way to browse files. Yeah, I'm so unbelievably excited about column view. It's such a minor thing, but it's awesome. Folder sharing. So if I can convince you and a couple other people, I think I can completely ditch Dropbox now and move to iCloud Drive for everything.
Let's do it. You don't have to tell me twice.
Yeah, I mean, I want to wait till the full release is out right now.
Sure,
because,
sure.
You know,
we'll try it
out.
Our
stuff is used for production. But I think especially because Dropbox just raised their price. It was only like $2 and you actually get more storage and stuff like that. But like the tier I was on, they're getting rid of and it's going to cost me more money. But I'm already paying for iCloud Drive. So I'm like, well, now that it has shared folders, there's legitimately no reason for me not to just put everything in iCloud Drive. Because it's been really good, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, iCloud Drive has been like the last kind of thing that I don't use. It's and use like a third party kind of thing instead. And I'd like to move more and more of my things over to iCloud Drive in order for it to work. I mean, I do some freelance work that involves me using Dropbox, but I would prefer to use iCloud Drive because it just seems to be a much more pleasant user experience for Apple users like you and I, whether that is on the Mac or for the iPad. Like iCloud Drive is built into these OSs and they work really well for the most part. And for them to have like the last thing that I kind of wanted, which was folder sharing, it works. And like I'd love to kind of just see what we can do with it and start using that more and have me move away from Dropbox.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. Another one that I'm very excited about is SMB file sharing. So this is for like shared network drives. So you can browse to network drives, so servers, traditional computers, things like that. You can save stuff straight to them. This basically, it's not FTP, but for a lot of people, I think this will cover the needs that transit left for them. Transmit. Did I say transit? Transmit. Left for them when transmit went away. So I think this will cover a lot of people. This basically will cover my needs for what I was using transmit for.
Yeah, I still use FTP for certain things, and I don't know anything about SMB.
FTP or SFTP? I need to don't use FTP. Do not use FTP. FTP is not secure. Do not.
I use SFTP. I use SFTP port 22. It's all built into the back end of my website. It's all SFTP. Chris. Don't freak out. It's okay.
Yeah. There's file transfer protocol, and then there's secure file transfer protocol.
It's all secure. It's okay.
Yes. Okay. All right. Sorry. Yeah, I deal with security stuff every day. So I legitimately, like, nobody use FTP. Nobody should use FTP for anything. Like, you're probably thinking to yourself right now, oh, I have this one use case that he's not thinking. No. Don't use it.
If you can find a way to use SFTP, you should.
Same thing with SMB V1. Everyone should be using SMB V3, unless you have a Windows 7 environment, which is you should use SMB V2. Sorry, I just turned this into an IT podcast.
what's the other one? There's another one that's like way more secure where it's like it's supposed to work with internet connection.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember the name off the top of my head. Yeah. Anyways, so SMB file sharing's there. And then the big one that literally I get asked about every single day that I am so excited is here, external storage support.
Yes. Oh, my God. You have no idea. Like, that was one of the biggest catalysts for me to continue using my Mac more and more because I am one of those people that buys the smaller storage iPad stuff. And it's primarily just because of my wallet.
Yeah, I get that. I completely get that. See, for me, I'm like, I would rather save as long as possible and get the biggest possible storage so I just don't have to worry about external drives and things like that. Now, that being said, I will still have some external drives around so I can use it to like back up projects and asset videos and stuff like that. Like, this is going to be a great way for me to keep a lot of my video clips around and just keep them to the side so that way I can, if, you know, ever I need to go back and like pull a clip of like the Logitech Folio keyboard that I did a review on, the Logitech Slim Folio keyboard. If I, you know, I did a review on that. If I need to pull a clip from that, I can keep it on there, because right now I'm just deleting all my old clips because I don't really have a good way of storing them. So now I just buy a bunch of external storage hard drives, keep them there. If they break, oh well. If not, I can still go back to them. It won't be something that's mission critical, but it'll be something that's nice to have if I can, you know, do it.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, if we're going to go into this, like, the reason I got the smaller storage is because this was, when I got my iPad, I was primarily doing writing, and I wasn't really doing a whole lot of, like, podcast editing or any kind of production work on my iPad, but more and more I keep using Ferrite to edit podcasts and things like that, and I'm actually really enjoying it. So it was kind of in a secondary thing that kind of happened after I got the iPad, where I was like, oh, this actually works really well. I haven't hit my storage cap yet, and I've added like 4 or 5 different podcasts on this, and I've done some other secret work for my wedding on it, and it's worked really well, and I'm enjoying using it. But the concern I have is that, like, I either have to spend a bunch of time to, like, upload this to my Dropbox or upload this to my iCloud drive and just save it all there and then start using storage caps on that, or I can just locally save it on a hard drive and just sort of let it sit there. And if it's something that's, like, mission critical or something that I want to make sure I have a copy of somewhere else, I'll put it up in the cloud. But if it's stuff like, you know, some of the podcasts I edit for freelance work where I'm just holding on to it until I get paid for it and the episode publishes, I don't have to worry about it anymore because the client was happy with it and they published the episode, I can then delete it. I can still keep it on a hard drive and not have it take up any of my space on my iPad or any of my machines. That's what I do with my Mac right now, is that I only keep the podcast that I'm editing on it. And the ones I don't, I throw on a hard drive. Like, I'm going to do the same thing with my iPad. Is I'm just going to plug in the hard drive and transfer stuff over to it when I'm not using it, and it's done. But I need to save it just in case. Like, that's my whole, like, end of statement there. Like, that's exactly what I'm going to use the hard drive and local storage stuff for. And, like, that's it. That's all I care about.
Yeah, no, and see, that's basically what I'm thinking. It's like stuff that'll be nice to keep around, but it's not mission critical in case I lose it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing we got kind of related to files is now when you plug in a camera or something with photos or videos on it, it'll ask you what app you want to import it to, which I'm so unbelievably excited about, because that means I don't have to import everything into Photos, copy it over to Files, then go back into Photos, delete it, then go into the deleted folder and then delete it again. Because I record everything at 4K. So, you know, a 10-second video clip is still like almost 100 megs. Like, it's huge. Like, everything is just uncompressed. Like, it's huge videos. So it does take up a bunch of space. Again, why I bought, you know, the big iPad, because I knew I would need that, because video. If you ever want to run out of storage, get into video editing. Because, yeah, that's how you run out of storage real quick. Yep. But, yeah, I'm really excited about that. I'm a third-party apps, I believe, will have to implement some stuff to that. So I'm hoping specifically Lightroom, Pixelmator Photo, Darkroom, and, of course, LumaFusion. Get that.
There's also two other things about the Files app that was really exciting. And we kind of talked about this with the Download Manager, but there's local storage now built into iOS.
There's always been local storage, but what you can do now is you can create a folder in the local storage area. So before, I've talked about this app a bunch, is I used to use an app called Local Storage, which would create a folder in the On My iPad section and then would allow me to save files in there, because the On My iPad section was specifically for apps. Like, you couldn't, like, a user couldn't create a folder on that section. And now you can just create a folder and you can save files there all day long. So video projects and stuff like that, that's where all my video projects go. And it just makes things a lot easier, because I don't have to worry about them syncing up to the cloud, taking up space, killing my bandwidth, maybe deleting off the device. Speaking of deleting off the device, now there is, if you go into like a file or something and you hold down, you like kind of long press, you get this contextual menu now, and there is a pin option. So you can pin a file so that it's constantly, so it stays on your device, so it doesn't wipe itself. Yeah, there's like rename, quick look, compress, duplicate, move, like info. There's all sorts of really cool stuff in here.
Interesting. Yeah, the compress one was the next part, is that you can zip and unzip stuff now, which is really cool, because that way you can kind of keep stuff that's mission critical on your device, but also compress it to where it takes up less space and you can kind of just get, you know, have it as a workaround. Or you can zip something and send it in an iCloud folder. That way it's easier for the other person to download it and get access to it, and they can unzip it from their device as well, which is really, really nice and really cool to see it, because that's what, I mean, Shortcuts has had that for years. Even back when in the workflow days, you could zip and unzip stuff all the time, but for it to be built into the Files app is actually really, really neat and really cool. So,
yeah, I had this elaborate shortcut that would basically, it would pull a file, look to see what its extension was. So if it was a zip file, it would then just go uncompress and then ask me where I wanted to save the files. And if it was anything other than zip, it would just take those files and then zip them up and then ask me what I wanted to do with them. So I don't have to do that anymore. Literally, you just select it what you want, long press, and then hit compress. So that's really awesome. I'm very excited about that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Custom fonts. You can, you know, install custom fonts via the App Store into iOS. I don't think that that's exactly something that you've been able to try yet, because nobody's really been able to publish custom fonts on the App Store or...
Yeah, I don't think that'll be live until iOS 13 is officially out. But yeah, it'll be kind of interesting, because you'll be able to install fonts from third-party apps. We don't know what like the pricing or anything's going to look like. I know a lot of people are used to, you know, just using free fonts and stuff like that, but I will tell you, when it gets into commercial fonts and pricing and stuff like that, it gets expensive.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is going to be something that's open to everybody. I don't know if this, because Apple announced a few partners, including Adobe and TypeSerif, I believe. But we will see. So hopefully there are options in there, and hopefully it's not limited to just personal use. Hopefully you can get the commercial license as well for them. But this means no more profiles.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's nice. It's one less thing you kind of have to worry about when you install a profile. Like, is this something I want them to have access to, or is this not?
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to sort of have that. But yeah, the pricing thing is kind of what really worries me, is because I think that it could either go one of two ways. It can go, like, here's a font that you can use for personal use for, like, $3, or here's a font that you can use for anything, and it's $300, you know? Like,
yeah.
I've seen fonts go all the way up to, like, $18,000, and that's for, like, enterprise use and commercial use. And I understand that that is something that, like, businesses are built off of, is that the people, they spend thousands of dollars on fonts, and I get it. Businesses are iconic because of the typography that they use, and I get it. And I totally understand it, but as a consumer and a personal user, kind of buying fonts with that kind of price tag on it is beyond unreasonable. So I'm curious to kind of see what Apple and the partners do to kind of combat the fact that they are trying to make money off of these fonts, and the fact that they want consumers and iPad and iOS users to kind of get access to them and use them however they want. So it's interesting to kind of see what happens there. We'll definitely have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, I'm curious. That's kind of my biggest question right now, is what is that going to look like? So, we will just have to see. There's a whole bunch of new gestures for text editing. Kind of hard to explain in audio. I will have them in my iOS Oh my god, I'm going to keep saying iOS 13.
Yep.
iPad OS walkthrough. I don't know if you want to talk about these, Jeff, but it might be a little hard to talk about audio here. I'll let you go through them then, because they're kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, one of them is that it has like more multi-touch support stuff. There's a copy and paste three finger gestures that you can use, and then there's also a three finger swipe that you can do to undo stuff. So it's kind of neat to kind of see that there's just like specific gestures and stuff you can now use with copy and paste. I'm not sure if the option to like select something and then tap on the selection to copy and paste is still there or not. That was never really explained or shown. Maybe you have some insight on this, Chris, or not, but selection is new. They said it was easier, but I don't know exactly, because you basically have the ability to, like, you tap on where the cursor is and you just drag and select that way, kind of how you would on a Mac, where you click and hold and then just drag over the word. You can do that now with gesture support on the iPad, which is interesting. I haven't seen it in practice yet, and
that works really well. Like, I'm doing it right now, and you literally just like just hold down your finger, it selects, and then just drag until where you want to stop.
Okay.
And it's actually works really well.
So the one that is kind of worrisome, or I don't know about worrisome is the right word, but you can pick up the cursor and kind of drag it to wherever you want now. You don't have to use the keyboard thing where you use two fingers to swipe and move things around. You can just pick up the cursor and basically put it wherever you want. And that one, and I don't think it's the presenter's fault, but that one seemed a little bit difficult when it was in the demo. But I think it was partly because whoever was doing it was very nervous. I would be too. I'm not judging or criticizing him for that, but like I haven't seen it in practice yet, and I don't know if you've used it or not, Chris.
I'm playing with it right now, and I played with it last night, and my hit rate is about 50-50 with it. Sometimes it about 50% of the time it works, the other 50% of the time it just ends up selecting the word. So I have a feeling it'll get refined over the betas. I don't think this is necessarily the final version of it, but I imagine like the sensitivity of it will be tweaked.
Okay. All right. We'll have to keep an eye on that, and that'll be one of those things. Finally, there's like a scroll bar kind of preview thing on the right side when when you have large PDFs or documents open, you can just use to scroll to a specific section as opposed to having to continually flick and dig and dig and dig until you get to the part where you want a huge document, which I thought was interesting to kind of have that ability to quickly select where you want things to go. That's really nice for people that have to deal with large documents like lawyers and real estate agents and stuff like that, that might use an iPad. Or if you're buying a house and you need to go through all these documents to sign, you can do that too. So that's cool. I mean, that's basically the big ones that I saw as far as editing and markup and stuff like that. There's a couple of really cool markup things that I'm sure you'll show in a couple of videos, Chris, that I can't really explain best with audio. But
yeah, they're kind of hard to talk about over audio, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. You can swipe from the pencil up from the left corner and then you can start marking up wherever, anything you want, which is neat. But that's all I know and that's all I can really give information on. So keep an eye out for Chris's videos throughout the summer and when iOS 13 becomes available, because I think that you have your work cut out for you, man.
Yeah, there is there's a lot. There's going to be a lot to do this summer. I was kind of going through everything like personally I have to do this summer, and I'm just like, I don't know how I'm going to get this done. There's two last things I want to talk about before we kind of wrap up this. Mouse support is here. It's via accessibility. It could be because I'm using a not as powerful iPad as the iPad Pro. I'm kind of using a lower end iPad, but it's very janky almost. Like it's very, and you could tweak the sensitivity and stuff, and I haven't had a chance to play with it. And to be fair, I was really hyped up on caffeine when I was trying to get through all this and play with it. So I may not be the best person to talk about that right now. I think I had probably 6 Diet Cokes in the span of like 3 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, I just need to get this done. I need to get this done.
Your body is going to have such retribution on you. It's going to be stupid.
Oh, it already has. God. Absolutely already has. As soon as we get done, I'm going back to sleep. So the mouse support is here. It's really cool because depending on the mouse, you can customize the buttons to do certain things. So like left click is regular select, but you could do like right click for the menu, or you can do like right click for Siri. You can, if you have like a scroll wheel and there's like a middle click button, you can make that to go home or whatever. There's a lot of cool stuff here. I have an idea for a video around like kind of an iPad desk setup that would be featuring that. Supposedly it does work with Bluetooth mice, but the one Bluetooth mouse I have with me does not work right now. So we'll have to. I have some other ones and stuff that I can try out, but I won't be able to test those until later. So I'll figure that out. The last thing that might probably be the single coolest thing Apple announced is the full voiceover control in iOS 13 and iPadOS.
Okay.
But it's that, you know, where the presenter was like, open messages, send Chris a message, say hello, send, and you know, like replace such and such word and blah blah blah. And like they were controlling the whole OS without ever touching the screen. I just thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think from an accessibility standpoint, I think that makes a lot of people really happy that desperately need that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I think it's really cool.
I think it'll be something I play around with. I saw a couple people talk about how this could be really cool for just like sitting back and like I saw a term, quote unquote, like they were just, you know, armchair computing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're just kind of sitting back and you're telling the computer what to do. But like it's definitely like, I don't want to take away from the fact that this is definitely an accessibility setting. And this is going to help a lot of people that could use this. And I think that alone is really cool.
Yeah, I think so as well. There's a couple other things that I wanted to mention, too. The Apple Pencil got some updates. They're going from 20 milliseconds of latency to 9 milliseconds of latency. I don't understand this. I don't know what kind of black magic this is that they managed to make that work or what, but it's interesting to kind of see that they were able to do that without too much of a problem from a user perspective, because there's no new Apple Pencil to offer this latency. It's all software and I don't know. I don't know how they did it, but that's cool. They have a tool palette redesign and they're offering PencilKit APIs for third-party apps, which is cool. And you can move it around and minimize it and stuff like that, which is, it's also really interesting for people that use the Apple Pencil a lot. I think that is a welcome achievement for Apple with the Apple Pencil without having to make a new device to have this low of latency, which is mind-blowing.
What I'm really excited about is the Pencil Kit for developers. So
yes,
you know how like every app that supports the Apple Pencil has different tools and stuff like that, because there's no consistent iOS, now iPadOS, Apple Pencil toolkit. And now there is. So developers can still make their own. And I imagine developers like GoodNotes and Procreate will make their own because theirs are very, very good. Seriously, GoodNotes might have the best ink engine on the whole OS. Like it's really good. But this means apps that, you know, maybe their primary focus isn't the Apple Pencil, but they want to allow you to mark something up, maybe like a PDF viewer or something like that. They can just implement this and it's good to go. Like they don't have to make their own thing.
Yep, it's really nice, and I think that's a welcome addition.
So we're going kind of long, but there's two things I kind of want to mention that we didn't get that I overall, like, I don't want it to sound like I'm down or upset or anything, because I'm very, very happy with what we got, and it was beyond my expectations. But we did not get multi-stream audio support, which is something I know we both wanted, so we could just podcast straight from a single iPad and not have to use the multi-device setup. Basically, this would mean is you could do a Skype call and record your local audio at the same time. And we also didn't get Pro Apps, which is something I've been wanting since I've been using the iPad. I want Xcode, I want Final Cut, and I want Logic. I still feel like those are coming, and I think I said in our video where we talked about like what we kind of wanted to see, ironically for iOS 13, I think I said I didn't expect them this year, that they kind of feel like a next year thing, but now that I think about that, I think I've said that every single year, so
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know, we'll see. Hopefully they're a next year thing. I could see them also not being released at a WWDC event. I could also see them being released at an iPad event, because, you know, that they would be separate apps, they would not be built in, and I guarantee you would have to pay for them, so
yep.
Yeah, I mean, that is what it is. So, yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I mean, in the meantime, before Pro Apps come to the iPad, you could just have a 1,000-track podcast in the new Mac Pro you're going to get, right?
Well, I mean, it was 1,000 tracks plus, like, 1,000 tracks of, like, automation or plugins. I think it was plugins. That was awesome. That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. The thing that really got me more excited, the 1,000 audio tracks in Logic was pretty cool, but the thing that got me more excited was the real-time 8K video editing where they were just dropping effects in and stuff like that, which is funny because I do real-time 4K editing on my iPad with LumaFusion. So, I mean, I know there's a big difference between 8K and 4K, but it's just funny that they have this big, massive Mac Pro to do real-time 8K, and I have my iPad and I'm doing real-time 4K. Now, I understand the difference, and there's, you know, a huge difference there, but still, I thought that was kind of, I got a good chuckle out of that.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting to kind of see that happen, but you can do up to 3 streams of 8K with that, so it's not just one, you can do 3 streams of 8K with that.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the deal. I right now have 3 streams of 4K video in a video project, soon to be 6, whenever that gets released. They said, I don't know. We'll see when the LumaFusion update comes, but that'll be pretty exciting.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll keep an update on that and keep going. We'll definitely be continuing this iOS 13 thing. Once the public beta comes out, I will be installing it on my iPad. You know, whether that's a good decision or not, we'll see. But I will be putting the public beta on my iPad as soon as I can. I might do it with my Mac as well, but we'll see. Because the problem with the Mac is that I think this is the first version where basically all of the 32-bit apps are not going to be supported anymore. So it's one of those things where, like, if I update...
Just go into... I believe it's been so long since I think go into Activity Monitor and see what's running 32-bit, and then you'll see right then and there that what's gonna break.
Okay, all right.
There you go.
I'll have to see if I'll look into it. We'll talk more about that at some point. I will say that some of the apps I use that are mission critical on my Mac are 32-bit still. So,
oh yeah, then I wouldn't update. So, other than that, anything else you want to add?
No, I don't really have anything else to add, Chris. I think that it's just going to be an interesting summer, and I'm kind of, dare I say, excited to start using the iPad more.
Oh my gosh, you were using the iPad all the time, and then I can't keep up with you, Jeffrey.
I told you, I'm on a Chromebook right now. Come on.
Okay, all right, whatever. Anyways, that just about does it. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you next time.